I haven't really planned anything yet, but I'm excited just to I'm going to spend next week kind of writing down a list of just everything I've wanted to try and then create a different list of, okay, what can I actually do during COVID times? But it feels good. I feel like a weight's been lifted, so I'm excited.
That's awesome. I'm definitely seeing a lot more smiles on your face. That's great.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks.
Yeah, plus you just got back from 2 weeks of skiing in Tahoe and Colorado, so.
Yeah, so I've been spoiled.
That's awesome.
Yay. Hi, Cindy. So wonderful to see you. I've missed you.
I miss you too. It's been so long.
Yay. Yay. How long ago did we start working together? Was it like 3 years ago? 2 or 3?
Yeah, close to 3 years ago.
Something like that, girl. Oh my gosh.
It's
It's so great to see you. Awesome. And Ren's here too. Hi, Ren.
Hey, fine ladies.
Hi,
Hey, it's so good
Ren.
to see you.
Good to see you guys too,
Awesome.
finally.
Yeah, it's been a while, huh? You haven't been on a call in some time. I don't know. My mind, time, who knows? We're talking about perception tonight, so that'll explain why I can't really keep track of anything when it comes to these calls. Cool. All right. Well, let's get started. It's 7 after. We may have a couple of late hopper honors, but we'll go ahead and dive in. Tonight's call is going to be super fun, ladies. We're going to do some exercises, some perception exercises. I'm going to show you some videos. We're going to reflect on times in our lives where perception has played a big part. So this is going to be really interactive, and we're going to be using a lot of the parts of our sensory system and then learning about how that impacts our thrive mode and our relationship with ourselves and how we can take neuroscience with us into our everyday lives and utilize it to help us become and be the whoever version we want to be of ourselves as we go into the world and work on our thrive mode. So lots in store tonight. Let's go ahead and do a quick intro round. Sometimes we do a little bit of a more lengthy intro round, but for tonight, since we have so much on the agenda, let's go ahead and keep it short and sweet. We'll do name, location. How are you feeling? Just kind of tune us into how you're feeling energetically, physically, overall. And then actually, we'll just go right into, I just totally lied to you ladies. We're going to do a little bit lengthier of an intro round because I'm going to tack on a question. So, how are you feeling? And then the homework from last call was, how does your relationship with yourself get in the way of your thrive mode? How does your relationship with yourself get in the way of your thrive mode? So we'll do intro round and we'll tack that question on the end. So feel free to share that maybe like in a minute or two, and then we'll probably reference that and dig into that throughout the call later tonight. But we'll go ahead and set the stage with that and kind of do two birds with one stone. Speaking of birds, this is super random, but I found this little bird this morning down in my kitchen outside, who I'm taking care of. I'm nursing a little bird, and sometimes he starts squeaking, but I'm hoping to nurse him back to like health so he can fly away. So if you hear this like dinosaur sound behind me, it's I rescued a little guy. Anyhow, let's do intro round. I'll start with, I'm just gonna go around the screen here. I'll start with Ashley. Hi, Ash.
Hello. Hello, everybody. I am Ashley. I'm in Los Angeles, California, and I'm feeling really good. I guess I don't really have anything to complain about. I'm feeling good. Today was a good day. The last couple of weeks have been really good because for a lot of different reasons, but just feeling really good. How does my relationship with myself get in the way of my thrive mode? I get into my head way too much, overthink things probably, and sometimes I just need to let it be and be in the present moment, which I've done a lot of work on that, and I do that for the most part, but there are some times where I'm just like, oh, it needs to be like this big complex thing or, way to do it or whatever. And I just overthink it and make it a lot more complicated than it probably is. And sometimes I just need to like sit back and just trust that it'll happen however it's going to happen. There's probably other ways too, but that's the first thing that came up with in my mind. And I probably have still some of that, like, well, I do have high expectations. So still got some of that going on too. So yeah.
And how does that get in the way of your thrive mode?
That I think it goes back to the overthinking it and or like fixating on something for way too long than I should, and it just puts me out of like it puts me out of the present moment. It puts me out of my flow, out of the creativity and like all of that. Just, you know, gets you out of that. So. Yeah,
very relatable. Who can relate with Ashley? I'm over here like nodding furiously. Yeah, thanks, Ash. Ren, hi, welcome back. So happy to have you with us.
Yeah, it's good to be here finally. Yeah,
feel free to introduce yourself and share with us how your relationship with yourself gets in the way of your thrive mode.
Okay, I'm Ren. I am just outside of Rockford, Illinois. I've been feeling all the feels lately. It's been a rough couple of months. It's been good, but a little rough. So yeah, I've just got like all the feels. And how my relationship with myself gets in the way of my thrive mode. I'm gonna kind of springboard off of Ashley's a little bit and overcomplicating things. Like, all the things that I want to do in my business, just, I want to do all the things, and I keep coming up with more ideas of more things I can do, and that really gets in the way of, like, everything, because I cannot do all of the things. At the very least, I cannot do all of the things right now, so trying to learn to pull back a little bit and just simplify is, oh, God, it is not an easy task. So, yeah, getting a little too excited and trying to do all the things all at once. And, yeah, I got to remember I cannot do that, literally cannot do that, and it's okay. And just calm down and pick, like, one or two things and just go with that.
But it's so hard.
It really is.
It is, yeah. So how does it get in the way? This probably sounds like an obvious question, but just to specify, how does it get in the way of your thrive mode when you, like, want to do all the things?
Well, when I want to do all the things, the problem is I try to do all of the things, and then I didn't used to get anxious about things, but lately I've been, like, getting anxious about things, and I get upset because I can't do all of the things that I'm trying to do, and there's not enough time, and just like become like a big mess. And then, but then when I remember, calm myself down, come back to center and, you know, recenter myself. And then like, wait, it's not that serious. Untangle the mess somehow. Usually it takes like another person to help me unravel it a little bit. And then we can get back to where I need to be. But if I don't do that, I'm a big honking mess and I can't get anything done.
Who can relate with Ren wanting to do all the things, loading up your to-do lists or your projects or your workflows with more than is humanly possible to digest? Yeah, it's so funny, as you were sharing that, Katrina just hopped on, and she's a project manager, so I'm like, ooh, this is perfect. Hi, Katrina, we're doing intro rounds, so I'll circle around to you. We've got a few more in queue here, and then I'll circle around to you and invite you to share. So happy to see you. You might be driving, I'm not sure. Cindy, hi, feel free to introduce yourself.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my name is Cindy, and I live in Los Angeles, California, and lately I've just been feeling overwhelmed, and I feel like I haven't been able to like preserve my energy because I'm always giving out my energy to other people. And it's just like the people pleaser in me that I know that gets me in trouble. So I've just been overwhelmed with just like taking care of others, and it just kind of backfires sometimes, and it just makes me feel like drained. And then I'm trying to focus on like my goals, and I feel like I'm just surviving and not thriving. And so I kind of relate to what Rin was saying, with like wanting to do everything, but then like, part of my problem is like, analysis paralysis, where I just kind of like wanting things to be perfect, or I like, you know, do all this research and I just get tired at the end of all of that. And then I just, you know, end up not doing it. So that's where I feel like it gets in the way of thriving.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for offering both aspects of that up. The like, it sounds like you're devoting more time, energy, and resources to others, and that's actually taking away from your needs for yourself, whatever those mm-hmm. may be. And there's like a tendency there that's draining you, feeling kind of energetically tapped.
Yeah.
And then the analysis paralysis, like just so much that it's like, I don't know what to do. And there's kind of like a not doing anything as a result.
Yep.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who can relate with either? Actually, who can relate with the people pleasing part, the tendency to say, yeah. Yeah, definitely not alone, Cindy. And then the analysis paralysis, like looking at so many options or things that you just end up stalling out. Yeah. Yep. So human. Katrina's raising her hand. Thanks, Katrina. Thank you, Cindy. I'm going to keep going around the circle here. Griffin, so great to see you. Everybody, let's give Griffin some love because she is out of her job.
Yeah. Yeah, as of tomorrow, this is my probably my last Zoom call on this computer. So I'm excited about it. So I'm feeling great, needless to say. I'm feeling very light and excited. I'm feeling there's a little bit of anxiousness. I wouldn't say it's negative. It's more of I have so much time and I'm so excited to play around with it, but I'm also, maybe this is the analysis paralysis. I'm like, with all this time, what do I want to use it well, I guess. So I'm trying to balance being excited and just letting things happen with, also wanting to spend the time meaningfully. For the big question, I think it's kind of interesting. I don't know if my question is how have I been holding myself back, because my problem has always, as I've kind of learned and how I feel, is I actually haven't had a relationship with myself ever. I've put up these, I've created these roles and lived this kind of molded life. And so I actually feel like I'm just unpacking who I actually want to be as a person. So it's almost like my relationship with myself is I'm hoping going to be the thing that blossoms the thrive mode, because I have not lived that person. Haircut, you know, new look being part of this whole new adventure of just trying different things out to see what hits. So yeah, I'm excited about all of that.
Yay, thank you for sharing and congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Who can relate with Griffin? That's super rhetorical for me to ask if anybody's felt that way on their coaching journey. But I'm going to ask it anyway. Who's felt like once they started their coaching journey, or maybe you started your coaching journey because there was a sense of, I don't really know who I am. And then like, I'm kind of excited to find myself. And I'm excited to figure that out. Who can relate with that? Yep, awesome. Thanks, Griffin. Cool. And let's go to Joanne.
Hey, y'all. I'm Joanne. I'm located in Orange County, California. Sounds like we've got a lot of West Coast folks on the phone today. So I'm feeling very much in control right now in my life, which is amazing. I don't think if I were to rewind several months back, I would have felt that way. So I'm excited to feel like I know how to handle when I feel like those gremlins are approaching, or I have that monkey mind going on in the middle of the night. Like, I just feel much more in control, which is, feel really good about that. Around the question, so I think I get in my way because I enjoy taking care of other people. And so as a result of trying to take care of other people, maybe it's a part of the people-pleasing aspect of things, or maybe just me being a nurturing person in general, I then take care of others before I take care of myself, which I know that that's important for me to be able to thrive, is I need to have that self-love, that self-compassion, and think about myself as well. So I've been trying to remind myself to carve out that time and take myself out on those self-dates and remind myself that I am important too.
Yay. Oh, I love hearing that. Yay, Joanne. So a little bit of kind of maybe a flavor of what Cindy was sharing earlier as well, like the people-pleasing tendency to like want to take care of others, but that snowballing or kind of getting out of control and remembering to hold space for yourself as well as caring for others.
Right. Being
conscientious of that. Yeah. Oh, good for you. Who can relate with that? Just kind of finding yourself overextending. Oh man, like I have no me time. Yeah, good. I'm so glad that you're putting conscientious effort into that. That's wonderful. And Katrina, I am so happy to see you here too. You made a Thursday evening.
Hi.
Hi.
I did. I finally made one. I actually had to wake up.
Yay.
The baby and I fell asleep.
Aww. So Katrina, we're doing intros. We're doing name, location, how are you feeling? And then how does your relationship with yourself get in the way of your thrive mode? And I know I'm totally hot seating you right now. So
no, that's fine. I don't mind. I'm Katrina McCullough. I'm from Long Beach. So again, I for the West Coast folks, I'm feeling burned out. I just had my third baby. And I have a really demanding job, and just working with Fawn. I don't have a lot of a support system. I've kind of, where I live, I don't have a lot of family. And so, but in terms of how my relationship with myself gets in the way of my thrive mode, on top of, you know, what Cindy and Joanne have said, I think I find myself going down little rabbit holes all the time. Like I find myself, I'm trying to find the right way to say it. I feel like I have lots of, when I look back at the day or weeks or months, there was pockets of really good time that I feel like I just kind of wasted. I either get stuck in social media and I'm trying to pull back from that, or I get some whim of an idea that I want to do, and I'll spend days or hours doing that only to get to the end of it and realize that's not what I wanted to do anyway. And I'm trying to get better at scheduling that so that I can actually schedule in some relaxation time. Because that's the other thing, is I feel like I waste my relaxation time. Like I had a pocket of time to relax, and instead I spent it doing something completely useless, but actually took up brain space. One of the things that's been helping with that actually is the book club. It's helped me kind of push a lot of that other stuff away and just kind of focus on that one thing. So that's been, That's been helpful. So trying to like not let myself not get to the end of the day and go, gee, where did my day go? And how much more could I have like done just for me?
Yeah. Who can relate with Katrina? We're all like nodding our heads furiously. Yeah. Oh, thanks for sharing that. Yeah, those pockets of the mysterious time that just seem to evaporate. And we're like, wait, what? Where did those 2 hours just go? Or 20 minutes, right? Whatever the pocket may be. Ashley and I were just on a call recently, and we were talking about this very thing. And she's like, one of us said, like, where the fuck does all my time go? And so I'm going to create a daily planner for 2022 that's where the fuck does all my time go. And it's going to be like on one side what we plan to do, and on the other side what we actually do. So it's going to be a fun spin on the time and energy audit, something like that. But I think it'd be really funny and clever, because that's how a lot of us feel. Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Katrina. Much appreciated. All right, ladies. So I know Griffin has to hop off in a few minutes, and I want to do one of the perception exercises before she hops off. So we're going to do, for fun, I'm going to kind of break the ice here on the whole topic of neuroscience and perception with a couple of videos and a couple of kinesthetic exercises, and then a couple of visual exercises. And we'll start with a video. Let me go ahead and pull it up. Hopefully I didn't shut the window. And I might have. Oh, no. Okay, well, we'll start with a kinesthetic exercise. Oh, no, I found it. Okay. Whew. Sorry. Okay, so I'll share this video, and then I'll share the context around it after. I just want to make sure that we get something fun in before Griffin has to hop off. So the point and the kind of theme of this call is centered around the fact that we do not experience reality as it is. We think we do. We're pretty darn convinced that we do, but we actually don't. And there's a shit ton of science to support this in all of the realms. Our brains are fascinating machines, and what we are biologically predisposed to do is to pay attention to important things, or things that our brains think are important, and not pay attention to other things. And we draw a lot of assumptions, and we draw a lot of conclusions. And one of the ways in which our brain tricks us is through what's called change blindness, or that's the description of what happens when we don't notice change in our perception, but something has changed. So can you guys see my screen? Okay, let me do this one more time, because I have to make sure. Okay, cool. All right, so it'll walk you through it. Just go ahead and read the screen. This is pretty short, it's 2 minutes. And I'm gonna leave the sound off. I'm going to pause it. Who spotted the change? Raise your hand if you saw. Nope. Ooh, cool. Okay. Let me keep it playing. Who saw it that time? A couple of you. Okay. Here's another one. Nope. I didn't see it. Okay. Who saw that one? Anyone catch it? No? Okay, I'll go back, Ash. Do that one more time. You say that? Okay. Go back. All right, here's the last one. You got it? Okay. Yay. Okay, Ash, I'm going to go back to this one. This one took me a couple times, too, the car in the street. So focus on the center and then watch this car on the right, the back windshield of the car on the right. No?
It changes in color. It's light and dark. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it? Mm-hmm. Oh, then yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, good job. Yay. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and go back to off-screen share real quick. So Griffin, we're going to miss you. Have fun at your dinner.
Thanks for everybody. Being with us. Hi. Congratulations again. Thank you. So good to see everyone. Have a great rest of your week.
Me too.
Yay. Bye. Hi, Griffin. All right. So change blindness is something. So let me rewind a little bit. When I was at UC Berkeley, I was obsessed with human perception. I was like working in a lot of memory studies labs and neuroscience labs. I just find it really interesting how humans perceive reality and how we actually convert the world around us into what we consider to be like our own world, right? Our own, and we just kind of assume that everybody else's experience of reality is the way we experience it until we kind of start to realize that that's not the case at all. And that becomes pretty evident when we're in a disagreement with our partner, especially, or a disagreement with our friends, or something happens and there's just two really different opinions or different recollections about what's happened. Who's had that experience where you're like trying, you're like, how did you experience it that way? There's no way it was this way. Yeah, so really interesting stuff. And this is a huge field of study, and it's a really big field of study within the judicial system, because eyewitness testimony is really, really weak. It's at best, but it's been relied upon for so long. But thankfully, in the last couple of decades, there's a lot of evidence showing that eyewitness testimony can be impacted significantly and be very erroneous. In fact, it's like most of the time erroneous. Anyway, so I've been nerding out on this stuff for a really long time, and I took this class called The Psychology of Perception, which was really fun, and the professor was like this like short, really energized, kind of wiry hair Einstein-looking guy, and he would always bring in these really fun examples to show us of how our brains not only trick us, but also how our brains, like, we are creating reality in our brain and we're projecting it out. What we think we're experiencing is the actual world, so the outside in, but it's really inside out, because all of our perception occurs in here, right? It's within here. So yes, there's like a physical world. There's my table here, but also this table being brown and kind of cool to the touch and sharp edges, that's all perception based on the eyes that I happen to have as a human being that perceive this as brown, my hands being warm, thus perceiving this as cold. So point number one here is that we don't experience reality. And that's kind of everything, honestly, ladies, like kind of everything. This is where I've really started to like crack the code around the that it's really up to us to decide what our inner and therefore our outer experience is in life. It's up to us as to what we pay attention to and what we don't. It's up to us as to how we interpret things, how we narrate things, how we spin things in our narratives and our stories. And so, like, once I learned that there is no objective reality necessarily, it became a lot easier in a way for me to, whenever I find myself or found myself wrapped up in gremlins or self-doubt or like negative narrative, to remind myself, like, oh yeah, this is literally just a story that my memory is creating from God knows where, like experiences, past interpretations, etc. So if we can remind ourselves that our relationship with ourselves is what we decide it to be, what we decide to align with, what we decide to ally with or not, then it gives us our power back. We're no longer, it can give us our power back if we can remember to step into it, because we're no longer entertaining this thought that, like, maybe this gremlin's true. Like, maybe this gremlin is true that I can't, that I'm not capable of doing this thing. Maybe this gremlin's actually right that, like, I kind of suck and people judge me and, like, nobody wants to hear what I have to say. Or maybe this gremlin's right that I'm super crazy, like, horrible at time management and there's no hope for me, right? Whatever the gremlins are saying. So in knowing that the objective science shows that our narrative is not innately inherently accurate or not, can kind of give us that power to say, okay, there's a story going on right now, but it's just one slice of an interpretation of what's going on. You know, like, it does, that doesn't necessarily have to be true unless I believe it. So we talk a lot about beliefs in LFP and of course in our coaching all the time, our thoughts and our stories and our belief systems. And sometimes in my conversations with you ladies and even with myself, they feel really convincing, like really convincing. And I had it happen yesterday. I was working on my impossible project. Oh my God, you guys, I could never explain what happened, but I went down this whole rabbit hole around how I don't know how to manage multi-million dollar portfolios. So therefore I can't, this whole thing came up, this whole like spin out, and I caught it and I was like, this is hilarious right now. Like, this is just running itself. So when we perceive things to be empirically true, or when we think that just because what we're thinking is happening, it's true, then it's going to feel real for us. So remembering that reality is filtered through our perception, and remembering, okay, how do I want to perceive things? What story or narrative do I want to create around this? And how seriously do I want to take the thing in the first place? So we experience that simulation of reality on all levels. So tactile, optical, auditory, we hallucinate all the time without knowing it. Who's heard of the primacy effect? Priming or primacy effect? Okay, cool. So this is like a big thing in the psychology study realm where they have the participants sit in front of a screen. Basically, this is one way of doing it, sit in front of a screen, and they will, within, beyond perception, so fast that the participant can't see what's going on, but they'll flash certain kinds of images or certain kinds of words. So the exaggerated version is like really kind of horrific images, scary, violent, angry images, but it's below the threshold of perception. And then they have them do whatever the experiment is, which is like something pretty neutral, like do a puzzle or something like that. And then they have them, you know, they collect the data afterward. And it's so fascinating how influenced our brains are beyond the realm of the threshold of our perception by things like that. So this like subliminal programming sort of thing, or subliminal priming. So this actually ties into like why and how affirmations can be really helpful and effective if we wake up in our morning practices. If we wake up and we're like immediately hijacked into anxiety, immediately hijacked into like all the things, and we don't take a few moments to do our body scan and our check-in with our circus and like take that time to just tap and tune into our consciousness. If we don't do that, then it primes the rest of our day to feel pretty helter-skelter. When we do that, as hopefully all of you have experienced, we feel like we have at least a little bit more of a rein on our positivity or our ability to kind of be more present throughout our day, at least the first part of our day. So what I'm about to talk about, I mean, we're going to do a couple more exercises and shares, and then I'm going to drop into some super nerdy neuroscience in a moment. There's a terrific book called Deviate that is fascinating. It's entertaining. Bo Lotto is the author. He's a super famous neuroscientist who studies the perception of reality, and his book Deviate is just so much fun. It's nerdy, but it's really fun. And so he goes into depth about how our perception of reality is based on our experience of the past, and not our actual experience of the past. Our perception of reality is based on our interpretation of the past. And without going into it too much, and the reason I bring this up is because it does tie into relationship with self, wherein we tend to assume, because our brains are trying to be efficient, we tend to assume that what happened in the past, the way that we think it happened, whether it happened that way or not, it's up for debate. But however we interpret something occurring in the past is how it like goes into our database, and then we simulate that that's how things go. That's how things are going to go in the future. So if I give a speech and I completely forget what I'm talking about, and I have an emotional, especially if I have like a somatic emotional experience around that, then that's imprinted. It's imprinted on like a lot of levels in that case, because it's like feeling and thinking state. But I'm going to have that reference point in the future. And this is, I think, why a lot of people will try something once, and if it doesn't go well, they're like, I'm done. Like, I'm good with that. Like, I am not going to go humiliate myself like this again, or like fail again, right? So there are those experiences where something happens where we're impacted, like our vulnerability threshold goes into the red zone, where we start to feel like anxiety around it. And we then might be aversive or avoidant of doing that in the future, because we have a story that that's how it's going to happen, and we don't want to deal with that again. Conversely, though, I mean, there are situations where we do something well, we do something and we're like, woo, that was fun, or that was, you know, I just killed it, or what have you. And we create a narrative, we make meaning out of that situation, and we decide, I'm going to do that again. That was great. I can do that. And so we're more predisposed to do it again, more likely. So we experience the thing through our own storytelling machine, and then we create a new story on top of it about what's possible moving forward, or who we are based on that moving forward. Is this making sense so far? Kind of clocking through some pretty, okay, awesome. So let's do a share round here. So I was coming up with questions for this call, and I was having a lot of fun. Especially around this one question. So think of a time, an example of a situation, a time where you were pretty convinced that whatever was happening or happened was like pretty terrible, like awful. and that like you were a part of why it was not that great or awful. So usually we call these regrets, or we think of them as like, oh man, those like facepalm scenarios. And to tack on to that, a time that you thought was like awful or terrible, but then in retrospect, whether it was a week or a month or a year or 10 years later, you look back and you're like, oh my God, thank God I did that. Thank God I made that decision or that that played out that way. So there's the experiential situation, story around it. Maybe it felt catastrophic, huge mistake, big blunder, bad decision. And then later down the line, turned out to be a really great thing that it happened. I'll give you 30 seconds to come up with something, just for the sake of time, otherwise I'd give you a few minutes. Who has an example they're willing to share? Katrina's smiling like she's got something.
I can share, but I'm not sure if I'm thinking about it along the right lines.
Oh, yeah.
So what comes to mind was a serious relationship breakup. I don't know if that's kind of along the lines of what you're thinking about, but obviously now I'm thinking, oh, thank God that happened. I'm really glad it happened. But, you know, for like a year or two afterwards, I was so, you know, distraught about it, just wondering, should I get back together with them? Da, 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 you know, all that kind of stuff. But now looking back many, many years down the road, I'm like, gosh, I'm such a different person now. Like, I would not have been able to put up with that crap. Like, I'm just so glad I don't even have that person in my life anymore. So that's my example.
Awesome. Yes. Great example. Those are some of the first ones that come to my mind too. I'm like, thank God that didn't work out.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joanne. Yeah, who can relate with that? Like a friend or a partner, ex-partner, where at the time you're like, no, this can't be happening. And then later it's like, I dodged a bullet or a freight train. Yeah, great example. Cool. Who else? Any examples of, yeah, thank you, Katrina.
So I was in a relationship with a alcoholic and it got progressively worse. But he owned his own sales consulting firm. So this is a big vulnerable share. So I quit my job, moved out of my apartment, moved in with him and joined his company, in my mid-20s. And we traveled, we moved to San Felipe, Mexico. We lived in Big Bear. We lived in San Diego and I worked for him and he kept getting fired. Because he would inevitably do something, and I can use the word, he was a giant asshole, but he was really good at what he did. He would just eventually crash and burn, and he was driving my family crazy. They were beside themselves. They didn't know what I was doing. My friends were freaking out. And then eventually I finally broke it off with him. All of the things that we did, the crazy, weird adventures that we had, put together the resume that landed me. And I'm sorry if my connection's unstable. I can stop my video.
No, it
landed me the job that. What's that?
You're good. We can hear you and see you.
You can hear me. Okay. It landed me the job that I could then springboard into what is now my current career. And I really love my current career. I mean, I definitely want to go do other things in the future, but the hell that was the 2 years that we were together put together the skill sets that I was able to then springboard.
Mm. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, another relationship share. Yeah. All right. Anyone else feel called to share something around that? I have another question I'm going to invite you to explore, but anyone else? Situation that was like felt terrible or thought was terrible turned out okay. Okay. All right. So your next prompt is.
I think Ren raised her hand.
Oh, go ahead, Ren. Sorry.
I finally thought of something. It took me that long. The thing that really jumps to my mind was when I got into a car crash while I was going through my divorce, and my beloved Saturn was totaled. I was so angry and so distraught, and I suddenly had no vehicle to drive. But later on, you know, I mean, it became obvious pretty quickly, actually. It was actually a good thing because nobody got seriously hurt. I couldn't afford the car payments anyway because I was going through a divorce and I was broke as fuck. And
you're like, so long, Saturn.
Right? I still miss that car, though. It was such a good car. And thank God I had gap insurance. So, ladies, just a little financial advice. If you have a car payment and you can get gap insurance when you get the loan, do it. Because that paid off my car. I couldn't buy another car, but I did learn to drive stick because of that. So it was like a whole bunch of good things did happen. It just took a little bit of time. And God, I was so fucking angry.
But it worked out to be a positive thing overall.
Like, it did, because that was one less thing. That was one less thing I had to argue about in the divorce. That was one less thing I had to figure out how I was going to pay for. That was one less thing I had to worry about in general. So that it turned out to be a good thing overall. And the fact that nobody got seriously injured. There was just some bumps and bruises, and that was, and just lost some vehicles. It wasn't my fault.
That's good. That's always a good feeling. Well, not always, but yeah. Thanks, Ren. Awesome. Okay, so your next exploration prompt is, okay, let's clear the slate from the previous question. Reflect on a time or an experience or maybe even a moment when nothing was the same after that. In some category, whatever the experience was. So a pivotal moment or experience that changed your life. Maybe not overall, could be a aspect of your life, but things really weren't the same after that. In 20 more seconds. Okay, who would be willing to share a little moment?
I can share.
Thank you.
I mean, obviously coaching with you, but that's a whole other longer story, but a pivotal moment that the first one that came to mind after that was when my now husband and I were in Italy. And Tanya, you know the story, but it was a few years ago, 3 or so years ago, and we had just gotten engaged. I was in a crazy job, corporate, 60 hours a week, whatever you want, 50, 60 hours a week all the time, stressful. And we, but to celebrate our engagement, and we do an international trip every year, we went to Italy, and we decided to do it differently than we had done it before. We were like, we're going to stay in the same place the entire time and not like jump from city to city or place to place or whatever. And so we were there for a week and a half, maybe a little under a week and a half, but whatever. And we stayed in a small Tuscan village. And we ended up having the place all to ourselves, because it was like a week before high season that we went. And so we were literally like the only ones in this beautiful Tuscan villa overlooking a vineyards and all of that. And we were walking through, it was our first day, and we were walking through, and it's like mid-afternoon, and we were walking through the village, the small town that we were staying in, and we just were like, we completely, you know, coming from America, we completely forgot, like everything was shut down. It was closed, and because it was like siesta time, you know, and they take the time to go spend time with their family and loved ones and, you know, whatever, take that break in the middle of the day, because their life is more than just work. Their life is about their life and their family and everything else. And I just remember being like, I just want a simpler life. I want this. I don't want my life to be all about work. I don't want to continue like slaving away like I have been, because I'm like, what is it? What am I doing all this for? And that moment is what kicked me. I mean, one, it really, really, really made apparent how unaligned I was with what I wanted out of life, and like threw that into the, you know, into full force, and you know, a lot of unhappiness and all of that. But I just, from that moment, I was like, I've got to figure something else out. I can't do this anymore. I've got to figure something else out. And I never really looked at anything that's same in terms of like, I want it, like life is more than just work. There's got to be more to life than what I had at that moment. So that was a pretty pivotal moment for me, and kicked my ass into high gear to figure something else out.
It's the moment that I think, thank you for sharing that, Ash, and it's such a great example of the moment we all experience, and maybe multiple of them, where our higher self is like, hey, stop it. Like, you're supposed to be here to live a thriving life. What are you doing? Like, just, you know, this, it becomes undeniable. We don't know how to make sense of it, most of us, but it's this knowing that we're here for something's off, and we're here for more. So that's a great example. Ash, I really appreciate that one. Anyone else have an example they'd like to share? Pivotal moment where nothing is quite the same, or maybe not nothing, but in ways things were different. Cindy, awesome, thank you.
So a few years ago, maybe like 4 years ago, I was married for 10 years. And we just had a very, very chill lifestyle. He was a homebody, and we didn't travel much. We didn't do anything, just because he was such a homebody and I wanted to experience life and do all the things. I just, you know, had this moment that I realized that I was just very unhappy and I wanted to live my life. And so I filed for divorce. And after that, I have traveled to Europe, to Hawaii, all the places. And I've gone to, like, you know, all the concerts that I've never been to. And living on my own has just been such a different and challenging experience, because, you know, I was just so used to like a dual income, and I was just so afraid that I couldn't support myself. So ever since then, I just felt like, you know, there's really nothing holding me back but myself. So since then, I've just been challenging myself to just do whatever I want and just live my life. So that's just the short story of it.
Yeah, awesome. Share. Thank you, Cindy. Yeah, that like drawing a line in the sand and then saying yes to the things that your heart is calling you to do and doing them. It's huge, especially like after having been in a couple, you know, like part of a dyad for so long and then doing things on your own. It's so badass. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. What was, I don't know if you can remember off the top of your head, Cindy, but there was this concert that you went to a couple of years ago, and it was like a super badass concert. You're like, which one? I just remember being like, Cindy is living.
Fleetwood Mac, maybe.
Maybe, yeah, that sounds like it. Yep.
Elton John.
Yep.
Yeah.
When COVID's over, we're all going to a concert with Cindy.
Lady Gaga. Yeah. Just like all Taylor Swift. Yeah. I was really having FOMO.
Awesome. I love that. Thank you for that share. Nice. Okay. We'll do one more question, share, and then we're going to do an actual physical perception experiment. So this time, think of a situation, experience, when you, so there's a before and an after. The before, you really did not think you could do the thing. Like you did not even think it was possible for you. Kind of maybe even seemed impossible or crazy, but there was a super strong feeling of like, I can't do that. There's no way I could do that. But then you did it. And then afterwards, you're like, I did that. So the before, and there's a doing in there, but I'm curious about pulling out the before and the after and hearing about that. We'll take a minute to reflect. And if you want an extra tack on to this, the after, not only did you do it, but like it kind of became like a normal thing for you. It's like no big deal. Do 20 more seconds. Okay. You would like to share with the group? Katrina, thank you. And then Ren. Cool.
Investing in real estate a long time ago, I saw other people doing it and having rental properties, and it just always seemed really confusing to me how they were able to make that happen, especially with the salary that I was making. But I bought my first fourplex in 2010, and now I have a small real estate portfolio. And now I don't buy homes anymore because with three kids, I can't. So now I just invest with friends. And that's actually worked out pretty well for me. So that was, and eventually I want to go even bigger, but I'm good for now.
Awesome. Tell us a little bit more about what it felt like before, like how impossible it felt, or like what was your perception of it?
It just always seemed like it was a, like the people that were successful doing it went to school for it, or it was their career, or they had lots of money, or they came from money, or there just always seemed to be a set of circumstances that didn't apply to me. I was in marketing and then I went into IT. I had nothing to do with real estate, and I did it without even, I mean, and then I bought a fourplex and I lived in it and I became a landlord just sort of did it. And then I use every home to buy the next home. So basically I would live in a home and then I would buy the next one. And part of it was just truly the fact that I bought in 2010 and the market just continuously got better. So I was able to just take advantage of circumstances, but then I would take money out, rent it, and buy the next one, and then do it again, and then do it again. And so so I've lived in all my homes. So I've almost never put 20% down. I've always had to do like the FHA or the 5% loans, but they've all been successful. So I feel like I've learned how to figure out, and they're all homes we've had to fix up. So we fix them up while we're living in them. So we've moved about every 2.5 years. I've lived in this home for 4 years, and that is by far the longest I've lived anywhere since 95.
Wow.
Yeah. 4 is a really long time for me.
Oh, that is so inspiring, Katrina. Oh my gosh. Like, this goes into money story stuff and perception of, you know, feasibility when it comes to finances. And I work with a lot of you and myself around money story and the things that we believe are not possible.
Right. P.S. I did that with bad credit too. I bought my first home with not a good credit score because I had gotten into the jerk. Hold on, boo-boos.
Yeah. I'm going to play not outside, but inside.
Sounds great. High five. Can you shut the door behind you?
And Daddy's going to be IG-88, and that's, I'm Boba Fett.
Okay, and you have to tell me who I'm going to be. We're going to do a Nerf War after
you're
this.
You're going to be Princess Leia.
I'm going to be Princess Leia, naturally. Okay. Love you. Yeah, so that was the one big misconception, too, is that you had to have, like, a really good credit score in order to be able to do this. He's adorable. The jerk that I had gotten into business with had destroyed my credit. And I mean destroyed my credit. And I was still able to do this with very poor to average credit along the way.
Mm. Wow, good for you. That is so inspiring. I'm guessing / hoping that's going in one of your books. That experience, because that's really powerful for women to hear, especially women getting out of a toxic relationship.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks, Katrina. Who else would be up for sharing an example of before and after? Oh yeah, Ren, thank you.
Freelancing. Before I started doing it, I really did not think that was something I would want to do, let alone really be capable of doing. And then I kind of got thrown into it a little bit, and I was like, oh, this is kind of nice. Wait, people actually appreciate when you do shit for them? It's like, and they're paying me? This is amazing. And so, yeah, so I did freelance for about 4 or 5 years, and I'm doing it again now. After I've been at one place for like 7 years and not there anymore. So yeah, it's like, what the hell? Good this is job. Awesome.
Yeah, that's a great example too. Like entrepreneurship, freelancing, anything outside of the standard model of, you know, like 8 to 6 or whatever the god awful hours are now in corporate America. But yeah, Ren, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it gives my husband connections, but he is amazingly supportive. So kudos for him.
yeah, definitely kudos for him. Yep. Cool. Anybody else feel called to share before and after? Thanks. Awesome. Cindy, go for it.
So kind of the same thing as Ren, like this past year. I've never done freelance work before, so I was like pretty nervous going into it, but you know, I was desperate for a job and income. I mean, it's not a lot of money because like it was just like a few hours a week, but I was just so nervous about doing everything on my own. And the job itself was just like, it was a fashion job, and I had to go to downtown to like do all the sourcing and talk to people and like find connections and network. And it was just everything that I've done in corporate, where I already had those things set up. And so it was just like a new thing for me to just like figure things out on my own. But in the end, like after I completed my task the first day, I got more confidence and more momentum, and it just didn't feel like so strange anymore.
Awesome. Good for you. Yeah, I remember you sharing that with me now. And I was like, so I just loved that story, that experience you had, because it's such a perfect example of like feeling really nervous and like not sure and new and like all the things, and then doing it and being like, oh, I love this. This is great. This
yeah.
So much fun. Yeah. Thanks, Cindy. Great example. Perfect. Okay, so for the sake of time, we're going to do our next exercise in perception. And this is going to require, I'll walk you through the steps and then we'll do the thing. This is going to require you to stand up. And when you stand up, you can be on camera or off camera. You don't have to be on camera if you don't want to be. You're going to stand up and you're going to face a wall. You don't have to be close to it, but just like fix your eyes at a certain place on the wall in front of you. And you're going to reach your arm out. Who's done this exercise, the pointing exercise? Does this ring a bell? Oh, yes, this is one of my favorites. Cool. okay. Also, if this doesn't work for anybody, no big deal. It doesn't mean anything's wrong with you. So just want to put that out there. Okay, so you're going to stand up, you're going to fix your eyes at a place on the wall in front of you, and you're going to point your finger in front of you, and then I will walk you through the rest of the exercise. So go ahead and do the first part. And make sure, like, wherever you're standing is, you know, comfortable, and you can kind of plant your feet under your shoulder width. And make sure that wherever you're standing, you can actually like put both arms out and like kind of do a sweep around you to your sides, so you're not like hitting, knocking over any glasses or anything. Okay. All right. So this is, well, I'm not even going to say what it is. I'm just going to walk you through it. So go ahead and point your finger at the wall in front of you with your eyes in front of you as well. And without moving your feet or your legs, you can move your torso but not nothing from the waist down. Don't like lift your feet up or anything like that. And what you're going to do is whichever arm you're holding out, you're going to slowly turn in the direction of that arm, and you're going to point your arm, that pointer finger, as far as you can behind you without actually moving your body. So keep facing forward and point your arm and hold your arm at that location as far as you can, but it should be behind your back. Slowly point it. Katrina, you might want to use your other arm. So it should be like a semicircle pointing motion. Out and around and behind your back as far as you can. And once you've gone as far as you can, go ahead and look at your finger and look at what it's pointing at. Real quick, take a mental snapshot. and then come back to center. Wiggle your arms around, wiggle your body around. Okay. Now, the next part of this exercise is you're not going to use your arm this time in its physicality. You're going to close your eyes and you're going to visualize the same arm pointing in front of you at the wall. And then visualize that same arm going around your body like it just did, slowly. And visualize it pointing as far as it was, and then even farther. So imagine and visualize your body sensation of your arm pointing farther behind you than it was able to a moment ago. And then slowly bring in your mind's eye that arm back to front and center. And then you can open your eyes and kind of wiggle it out a little bit. Okay, and now we're gonna do the same thing we did the first time. So we're gonna take our actual arm, point it out front, and we're gonna do the same thing. Move it around your body, point as far back behind you as you can without looking, as far as you can. And then when you're as far as you can, look back, see what it's pointing at, take a mental snapshot, and notice if it's farther behind you than it was the first time, and then you can come back to center. Okay. Whose arm was farther behind them the second time than the first time? Yeah? Okay, cool. How much farther? Like a lot, a little, quite a bit. Okay, okay. Katrina, did you get an opportunity to experience that? Do you want to do it again? We can all do it with our other arm if you guys want to do another round of it. Oh, maybe you have kiddos. I'm not sure.
For some reason, mine actually wasn't as far the second time.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So we'll drop the visualization part in and really emphasize that part. Really, really visualize yourself being able to point farther behind you the second time. So this is an exercise that's used in a lot of like visualization seminars, if I'm being honest, kind of subconscious mind stuff, but this is, it's legit. This is our psychosomatic connection and our ability to, this is what a lot of Olympic athletes use, a lot of people who do precision movement, like dancers or bodybuilders, stuff like that. And so what we're doing is, and I've tried this a gajillion times, because I was like, yeah, right, it's just because you stretch your arm out. Of course it's going to be farther the second time. But I've actually, like, done it enough times with people to, like, realize, okay, no, it's actually the visualization. But so if anybody wants to do it again, if anybody wants to do it on your own time. Just the exercise again. Sorry if I didn't explain that as clearly as I could have, but the exercise is to point in front of you and then, without moving, sorry, I just realized I was going to hit the wall, pointing as far behind you as you can. Ugh. Pointing at the corner of my painting. Okay, coming back, shaking it out, closing your eyes. So when I visualize it almost like unrealistically, it feels like, where I'm in my mind pointing like way over at the other side of the room, just to exaggerate it. And then I come back to center. I'll try it again. Yeah, it's like that much farther. It's so weird. Okay. So feel free to try it on. You can try it with your arms. You can try it with, you just like get creative with it. But the thing that really helps to realize that it's happening, that it's a mind-body thing, is that when you're at maximum the first time, it like really feels like maximum. It's like there, I cannot move my arm any farther than this point. And the mind simulates it, and the somatic follows suit. So there's like phenomenon where people, like amputees, have what's called phantom arm syndrome or phantom leg syndrome. There's like people get these phantom sensations, just kind of, we don't know why sometimes. And again, so perception is as much as we think we are experiencing reality, we alter reality in our minds. And to kind of wrap this call out, we'll continue on the next call talking about perception in a kind of a different nuanced way with subconscious mind stuff. But so what happens, and this is going to sound like a repeat in a sense with a twist. So we have input from the outside world. Like we talk about stimulus and response a lot, right? Stimulus and like creating a gap, hopefully, so that we can respond instead of react automatically. So with perception, we have stimulus, and a stimulus can be real or perceived, but it nonetheless is always perception in here. Once it's in here, it's in perception mode. And it might be close to accurate. Like if we see most of the time we're pretty accurate in terms of the general nature of things. Like I know that my dog Bartolo is brown, he's not purple, right? So I know that that to me is accurate. So the stimulus comes in, whatever that is, and then we make all of these perceptions happen, and then we react or respond based on what happens in here. So we tend to think that we're reacting to the world, but we're not reacting to the world. We're not actually reacting to reality. We are reacting to our interpretation of reality. So when it comes to, and then our behavior then is based on interpretation, not on reality. And our behavior oftentimes is confirming of our story, but not necessarily confirming of reality. So this is where we really start to trip ourselves up in our own relationship with self and thrive mode. When we get in our heads, when we pile things on our plates, when we are people pleasing, caretaking other people, when we are catastrophizing, when we're telling ourselves that we can't do this thing because that's for other people, that's not for me, right? Where is all of that happening? It's happening in here. It's not happening in the real world. It's not happening in objective reality. So awareness, as all of you know, because hopefully I've brainwashed you. No, hopefully awareness is something that you're all practicing consistently. Awareness is what helps us as human beings to wake up and realize, oh, I'm having a perception right now. I'm having a memory, or I'm having future simulation. I'm having a memory or a future simulation. Very, very rarely are we like here and now, especially when it comes to like stressful stuff. We're like living in the past or living in the future, or we're living in the present through the filter of the past. It happens a lot too. So what do we do about this, right? Because that then alters our behavior, right? We make assumptions. We make judgments about things that are inaccurate. We make judgments about ourselves. Using that example of like talking on stage, if I forget what I'm saying on stage for whatever, and I like have this whole story about how I'm not meant to be a speaker and like I'm an idiot and gosh, everyone's going to hate me, like I would self-implode and I would probably never again if I didn't know that all of that was literally just a bundle of stories happening that I could either confirm and make true or accurate by believing them and never getting on stage again, or just saying, okay, that thing happened once, moving on, not making a big deal out of it. Like, or as with a lot of personal development techniques, I'm going to reframe this, right? Like, so better to fail than to not try at all. So, and that's great. Like, reframing is helpful because sometimes we need to justify to ourselves that we weren't a complete, you know, fumble on stage. So our relationship with ourselves is directly correlated to our thrive mode in that whatever is quote unquote getting in our way that we think is getting in our way, it's a figment of our imagination that we're then making real somehow. So, you know, these people want me to do these things. I'm going to say yes to them because if I don't, then I'm going to feel bad because they're going to think I'm a bad friend. And so then I end up not having enough time for myself. So then I end up getting in my own way and getting in the way of my thrive mode, right? Like boom, 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 sequence of events. Whereas we don't have to believe the story. We don't have to believe this perception, whatever it might be saying, that we have to do this thing for whatever reasons. We don't have to believe everything we think. And that's one of my favorite quips ever is don't believe everything you think. If it doesn't serve you, if it's not aligned with thrive mode, you don't have to believe it. Try it, test it out. That's going to be your homework. I know this is very, in a way, like, reiterative of the module 3 stuff, but in another way, it's, I'm hoping that I'm like wanting to bring this home so that your subconscious, because that's a whole player in this as well, when your subconscious knows that it's fooling itself, it makes it easier to like wake up in the moment and be like, oh yeah, I'm totally just in a story right now. Because we're realizing we can zoom out. We're realizing that we can like hit the parachute button and like not have to go down with the plane. So the perception part of this, and I'm not trying to freak you guys out because this can be some super freaky stuff when we learn that reality isn't real objectively and that our brains are actually creating most of our experience. It's kind of scary. It's kind of freaky. Again, the book Deviate is really, really great. It like explains it in a not so crazy way. Oh, thank you, Katrina. Awesome. So with a lot of this research, and I'll start wrapping out and then we can do takeaways, whoever can stay after the call, because I love takeaway rounds. The way to interrupt our patterns and our habitual getting in the wayness of ourselves is A, awareness, and B, to do something and create a new assumption, to do something that creates a new assumption. So that could be, and Bo Lotto talks about this in his book, and this actually goes really well with Ashley's coaching niche that she, as soon as COVID's over, is travel. So travel is a way that we get out of our own paradigms. We get out of our own heads. We get out of our own, like, sometimes get our heads out of our own butts. And we travel somewhere and we see new things and our attention is, like, drawn to the world. We're, like, engaged with life, right? Like Cindy was talking about earlier, like, traveling, going to concerts, like, doing these things. So when, and that's just one example, but anything that can disrupt the pattern that's going on in your perception, that will help you to break that, help you get out of your own way, help you kind of override these things where you get in your own way. And Ren actually gave a great example earlier where you calm down, you center in, you have a partner who supports you in doing that, which is wonderful, and you kind of reframe the situation and get your bearings again, instead of, again, like kind of spiraling out of control. And that was a really great example. So real big takeaway here is you don't have to believe everything you think. In fact, I invite you not to. And he talks a lot in the book about, and the reason that it's called Deviate is because it's about deviating away from our automatic narrative of self. So breaking away from this like automatic default story that we might have about, like, I'm just this way, I'm this kind of person, I suck at speaking on stage, blah, blah, blah. And getting curious, and pahis is a word, I don't know if I wrote it down. Doubt, yeah. So doubt usually has a negative connotation, but he uses it in this really fun and positive way, which is like, get really skeptical about the bullshit that goes on up here. Just like doubt it, you know, like, I don't really know if it's true that I am really bad with time. Is that really true? Or do I just sometimes space out and kind of like time flies, right? So starting to disrupt that narrative that is telling, where we're recycling to ourselves that we suck at this thing, or we're bad at time, or we're, you know, we're habitual people pleasers. Maybe that's been the case in the past. The past doesn't exist. Cool. Starting fresh, right? It gives us this constant opportunity to wake up in the present moment and be freshly like, okay, like, I really sucked at that speech. There's one on Saturday I can give. I'm going to sign up for that. And just like, you know, moving on and not carry a bunch of weight around it with me. So doubt the gremlins. Doubt their importance. Doubt their strength. Doubt their relevance, like, whatever. Start over fresh. Every morning is a new day. And that will help us align with Thrive Mode, like with Katrina and her rentals, right? Like, just that step by step, like, changing that narrative, buying her fourplex, and then here she is with a portfolio. And we all have examples of that in our life. Ren with the freelancing, right? Ashley with coaching. I mean, we all have these, like, things that we never thought we could do, but we did some kind of a pattern interrupt. We had some kind of a deviation from that narrative and put in a different tape. And so all of this is to say that anything is possible. We don't have to, we're not chained to our past profile of self at all, ever. We can just totally not do that anymore. So, to be continued on the next call. We'll talk about subconscious mind and behavior change and some perception stuff with that too, but all in alignment, of course, with Thrive Mode. Cool. All right. Anybody have any questions? And if anyone has to hop off, please feel free to do so. Totally fine. Who would like to stay for a takeaway round or has a question? Bye, Katrina. Oh, let's see the little guy before you.
Yeah, I'm just going to hop off because this is what he looks like right now. Yay! He's hungry. So I'm going to go. Thank you.
Okay. Bye, Katrina. Thanks for being with us. Oh, he's getting some good coaching. He's starting him young. Awesome. Who can stay for takeaway round? Ladies. Oh, awesome. Thank you. Cool. All right. I am done talking. I have just talked your ladies' ears off. So let's do takeaways, and I'll start with Joanne.
Yeah, I think this perception, I think the whole concept of your perception is what you're experiencing in reality is resonated with me. And I didn't share it earlier, but when you had asked the question about pivotal moment in your life, many years ago, I think I made the decision that I wasn't going to be so hard and on my friends and having these expectations of how well or how close I need to be with an individual. And I remember that being a pivotal moment for me because it really allowed me to open my heart, my eyes, my ears in terms of friendship with certain people in my life now that I've become actually very close to, whereas previously because of how I wanted to, I was choosing to perceive our friendship made me really put walls up. So that really resonated with me today as, you know, it is true, right? It's all about how we are interpreting the reality. So we can choose and change that story to your point.
Yeah. Ooh, great example. Really great example. Yeah. it sounds like there was a, like an assumption that you had kind of made, or like a decision you had made around your friendships or what that entailed, and in shifting that you got very different results.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Great share. Thanks, Joanne. Mm-hmm. Cindy, how about you? Takeaway.
So I'm really glad that I joined this call, because I've just been running into a lot of videos about changing your mindset in order to achieve your goals. And so I really love this like perception exercise, because a lot of like the limitations that you think you may have is just like all in here. And if you just can imagine it and believe it, then like, yeah, it sounds cliche, but then you can achieve it. Yeah, my takeaway is just that, like, you can just change your reality by changing your mindset.
100%. Awesome, awesome takeaway, Cindy. Yeah. Yeah. And the most important thing ever, that realization right there, you can change your reality through changing your mindset.
Yep. Yeah, and like this whole time concept is really trippy, because, you know, like I've been thinking about going back to school again, and I keep thinking like, well, it's going to be like another couple years, and I don't know if like I'll have time, and I'm like, you know, 38 or whatever. And a friend told me like, well, time is still going to pass by, so you might as well do what you want to do. And yeah, it just ties back to, like, you know, perception of time that doesn't really exist.
Yeah, nice one. Yeah, thanks for bringing that one into the picture. That's I should do a call around that. Thank you, Cindy. Time, such a good point. We have this, like, story that there's anything other than the now, and we're like, oh, that'll take so long, but it's only always right now, though. So wait a minute. Yeah, totally. Thank you for that. Ren, how about you? Takeaway. Are you wearing a robe? Am I just noticing this? It looks so cozy.
It is. I had a shower early tonight, and I'm like, I'm just going to get cozy.
It's cozy and warm. Love that. Sorry, I got distracted.
It's easy to do. I'm going to be honest with you. Katrina's big reveal about her real estate thing was mind-blowing for me. And that's just something I really needed to hear today, because I'm like in a I'm just like in a spot where I'm like, I just pivoted out of one thing into another thing because of reasons. And I'm like, I don't know. Did I do the right thing? I don't fucking know. But it's like, I kind of feel like I'm like teetering at like rock bottom. And here she was, not necessarily at rock bottom, but probably feeling like she was close to that. And she's like, I'm just going to do this thing. And just like fucking did it. And it worked. And it's like, dude, that's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I kind of needed that today.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. So it sounds like there was maybe a story or an assumption or a narrative going on for you that Katrina's story kind of intercepted and challenged a bit.
I think so. Yeah. I'm still processing like a lot of what's been going on over the last couple of weeks, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. You know, a really great way to interrupt our assumptions, as I was talking about earlier, look for evidence to the contrary. Like, go online, go down rabbit holes of reading blogs of people who, like, literally went from rock bottom to figuring it out in whatever capacity is meaningful for you. Yeah. That, like, the hero's journey, it does something. This is a whole call in and of itself, too, but it does something. The subconscious mind, when it sees evidence to the contrary of what we have been automatically thinking or assuming, it can't any longer grab on to the old story as well.
Right.
So, and this is around anything. Yeah. So I love that. And whatever it is that we think we cannot do, and I hear what you're saying about Katrina's story, because like finances, real estate, that kind of thing does tend to carry a lot of story for a lot of us, right? And hearing that somebody that she was able to do that is like badass.
Right. So, especially the way that she did it. I'm like, that's fucking genius. That's awesome. Right?
I know.
Yes.
Yeah. So see how many examples you can find of people modeling what you want to do or what you want to make it through or whatever. And your subconscious mind, this isn't woo-woo, this is actual neuroscience. Your subconscious mind will start to pattern around that and stuff will start happening. I mean, we've all had examples of it. So I know that, you know, we just have to take a little bit of time. But yeah, thank you, Ren. Great share. Cool. How about you, Ash?
Well, you know, I eat this stuff up and wholeheartedly believe all of this as well. But what I took away today at the end of the call when you said, you know, using doubt to, in a more positive way, to doubt your gremlins. Like, it's just another, like, tool or different way to think about how to question your gremlins or question those thoughts that come up and, like, get curious with them and doubt them and, you know, play around with that. So that was just a really cool little tool or technique that I took away from it for myself and, you know, others and all that. But that was cool. And then the visualization is a great, obviously the perception, and it was a great reinforcement of the theme, but it was also just a really reiterating how cool our freaking brains and minds are and how we can do different things with them and and create a different reality or use them in a way to help visualize what it is that we want or whatever. But yeah.
Mhm. Awesome. Man, I'm glad that resonated. Yeah, the doubt piece. I think, yes, I do. I'm like, which sticky note arrangement do I have today next to me? But there's this, what I'm about to share is one of my favorite things that I totally forget about. But it makes a big difference for me because I have this story about whatever this gigantic project is, that there's a lot to it and it's a lot of heavy lifting and it's a big mountain. It's a mountain I want to create, but it's a freaking big mountain. And then there's this and it says, what if it's easy? What if it's easy? And I'm like, oh yeah. Like, I don't know if it's going to be as hard as I'm making it up to be in my mind. Like, I don't know if I'm, you know, so whatever your version of what feels difficult or what feels like it's getting in your way, just check in and doubt, like, what if I'm not bad with my time today? What if I'm doing great? What if I'm fine? And like, what if it's not a big deal? So, yeah, the doubt piece.
Yeah, it's awesome, yeah.
Yeah. All right, ladies. Thanks so much. This is lots of fun. I'm going to start bringing in more interactivity to these calls, especially when it comes to perception. I got really excited because I like to nerd out about this stuff and it's so, like, you know, sensory. So next call will be at the end of March. We're going to do monthly calls in 2021, last Thursday of the month. So just, like, it's easy. Everybody can plan on it ahead of time. There's a possibility that because I'm not doing biweekly calls anymore, at least for a while, that I might extend these to 2 hours and then, like, we'll have a break between and then we'll do activities. I might structure things a bit differently. So this is our 65th call. So I figure, you know, shake things up a little bit and change the format. But yeah, anyhow, thank you all so much for being here. And your homework is to keep this. Put some sticky notes up, do what you need to do to just remind yourself to wake up and, like, check in with your perception and remind yourself that you don't have to believe everything you think. Cool. All right, everybody. Thanks so much. So great to see you. So great to have you on a call, Ren and Cindy, too, after so long. It means a lot. And Joanna and Ashley. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Bye, guys.